When your pet carries a gene that can turn into a potential health problem, you've got to focus on long-term management rather than short-term control. A recent edition of Clinician's Brief for Doctors of Veterinary Medicine digs into the top 5 genetic diseases for dogs and how to best treat them. Dr. Matt Fraker from the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center in Normal says starting out at number 5 is a problem that might take you by surprise, because Fraker says most people don't think of this as a genetic disease.
Cranial cruciate ligament rupture, which is the equivalent of an anterior cruciate ligament rupture in humans, ACL in humans, CCL in dogs. Because so many ACLs in humans are traumatic, skiing, football, basketball, running, and there's always been this assumption that that's the same thing that's going on with dogs, that these are athletic dogs, highly mobile, and they hit something wrong and this traumatic event occurs. And in fact, we're fairly certain it's a genetic predisposition with conformation in the knee. A lot of these dogs who have been athletic 3, 4, 5 years old, and you get in on their knee as soon as they rupture their cruciate, and you find really a surprising amount of arthritis in the knee for such a young animal. And the thought process is that there's conformational defects in these dogs that lead to a low, kind of chronic low-grade arthritis that's totally subclinical. The owners don't know it's there, the dogs never show signs, but that low-grade arthritic inflammation is weakening the cruciate ligament and makes it easy to pop. And the other thing you'll see is these dogs who have had one cruciate go, most of those dogs are going to experience the other leg rupturing in a 2 to 3 year span.
Well, is there anything we can do to prevent this?
This one's a tough one because the conformation, figuring out who has this and how it shows up, it's really difficult. The big thing is managing it. Once it happens, is figuring out the appropriate management. That's controversial right now.
What is it?
Well, it's always been considered surgical, especially for animals 20, 25 pounds or heavier. Like cats rupturing their cruciates, not a whole lot of surgery, at least in our clinic. We don't often push surgery too hard on cats or small dogs. But the bigger animals and the really big animals, surgery is still probably the top recommendation. But there have been some studies out there looking at dogs' recovery rates without surgery. Now, this becomes very complicated because if it's just a cruciate rupture and the meniscus doesn't get torn, the problem is when the cruciate tears, the tibia becomes unstable in a front-back motion. So you can actually slip the tibia out in front of the leg, and it's called a drawer. In humans, it's the same way. It's a cranial drawer, an anterior drawer. Well, that drawer instability means that your cups, your little meniscal cups, are getting dragged back and forth by the end of the femur, and it's not uncommon for the middle meniscus to get a bucket handle tear with that distraction back and forth. Now, meniscal tear is a surgical situation. That's going to cause the animal lots of discomfort until you get in there and clean that up. I still feel that on the bigger animals, you want to certainly consider surgery. There's a couple different surgeries out there. This is also controversial. Which one is better? Many studies show them kind of head-to-head. That's all discussions to have with your veterinarian, but generally think about surgery on a cruciate.
All right, what is the top 4 genetic disease for dogs?
Number 4, we have to have a really cool name for, although we don't usually call it this in practice, myxomatous mitral valve disease.
That's cool.
So it's a myxomatous, what a great word. And it is clean, WGLT, it's okay, you don't have to edit it.
Okay, great.
So heart disease, mostly small dogs, Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, are well known for having this. I think we see it a lot more often in small dogs where they'll develop a murmur anywhere from 7 to 11, 7, 12, 13 years old. They start getting a heart murmur. And what's happening there is we're getting these fibrous changes on their tricuspid valve, so the valve doesn't close all the way and you get a little regurge. Now, many dogs can handle that and compensate for that for years. So a dog with a heart murmur doesn't necessarily need to be managed with drugs right away.
Well, I would think diet would help. I mean, having too much weight would make
work. There's common sense stuff to avoid obesity in these animals. Dogs have classic signs for heart failure where they start doing a dry hacking cough. Sometimes increased respirations with the mouth closed. Panting is not typically a symptom of heart failure.
Huh.
Resting dogs where you can see their ribs, they look like they're breathing with a little bit more effort. In, out. And again, with the dry cough. And they usually give us some time to institute medical therapy, and it is very effective in dogs. It can really make a difference on their lifespan. So with these little dogs that develop murmurs, the big thing is to continue to monitor them. Anytime that you have to go see your vet, if it's a nail trim or a bump or itchy, have them check the heart, make sure there's no clinical signs associated with the heart. If you start thinking that you're having clinical signs with the heart, then you do the standard stuff, EKGs, chest x-rays, consider some medical management for those guys.
How about number three?
Number three, I think this is interesting that they have this on the list. It's because of breed popularity. There, if we manage certain breeds, which I wouldn't recommend because I love these breeds also, but it's the brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome.
Are we talking a smashed face?
Smashed face dogs, yes, absolutely.
Like a pug.
Bulldogs, French bulldogs, and pugs are the main ones that come
to mind. They're very popular right now.
They are hugely popular. Now, here's my take on that. Every one of those breeds should be hugely popular. Pugs, Frenchies, and English bulldogs are great dogs. All breeds are great dogs. Those are all great dogs. The architecture in bulldogs and pugs, when you go into the back of their throat, their palates are too long. They're these meaty, soft palates that can actually fall like a curtain down into the airway when they're breathing in. When they start really getting stressed out, this flabby, soft palate can get sucked in. And they have other architectural changes we don't too technical to go into here that contribute even further to the blocking of this airway. And it can be extremely serious. Now, there's really, really solid surgical management to repair all of these architectural abnormalities in the backs of their throats. It's expensive. In my personal opinion, the docs who do this a lot do it, and they're great, and I would recommend it because it's not the kind of surgery that I think you want someone, I've always wanted to try this.
Go to somebody who knows their chops.
Yes, I would. We'll see some animals that when they get older, they're obese, they're old, that the owners are very uncomfortable with the thought of subject them to anesthesia, and legitimately so. So there's some things we can do medically to take some of the stress off all that tissue in the back of the throat.
All right, what's number two?
Number two, everyone knows, canine hip dysplasia.
Oh, dear.
It can affect just about anybody. Certainly, certain dogs are more prone to it. German Shepherds, we know. The Orthopedic Foundation of Animals has a screening x-rays. They recommend at 2 years of age.
Dogs, a screening x-ray?
Well, for dogs, absolutely for breeders. And absolutely if you've spent a lot of money on what your purebred retriever or lab or shepherd, and you just want to get in. Most of the really good breeders have some sort of dysplasia guarantee and have tried very hard to get the dysplasia out of their population. A good time to confirm that's at 2 years. The bones are developed, pretty much structured where they're going to be. You can do 6 months, 7 months, 9 months, but there's still a lot of things that are going to change. And a lot of younger dogs have x-rays where they look like they're dysplastic. There's distraction and whatnot. And it's an artifact. It's not actual dysplasia.
Okay, so let's say you get the screening done and it looks like, yeah, dysplasia is going to be a serious issue ahead for my pet. What can I do?
We've discussed several times nutrition. People underestimate the importance of trim dogs with arthritis. So, yes, we have anti-inflammatories we can use. Yes, we have joint supplements we can use. Great joint supplements that are out there.
Hydrotherapy.
Swimming your dog, using the tanks that they have the treadmills in. All of those things are maybe, let's say, 20% of what you can do for this animal. You're working with this little 20% work zone of improving their comfort and their function. Weight loss is like 80% of it. All of my dogs, I always keep them on a J.D. Hills diet. It's a joint protective diet made for arthritis, but it's so packed with fatty acids and joint supplements that I just think it's a great diet, period. So I put all of my dogs on that. And joint supplements on big dogs, whether they have arthritis or not, be proactive because their joints are getting beat up. If these dogs are 80 pounds or bigger, healthy, muscular, whatever, their joints are getting beat up and they're trying to get arthritis into their older years. So there's no harm in being proactive with fatty acid supplementation and joint supplementation. Ultimately, there is a surgery called a femoral head osteotomy where we just go in and we remove the femoral head. So we get rid of the femur acetabulum of the pelvis, that contact. It's not a hip replacement. It's just taking away with all the points of contact. And the hip muscles actually make that joint work. So you do not handicap a dog by doing this. The function can be excellent, especially with the loss of pain that is created by the surgery.
Okay, and let's go to number one, genetic disease for dogs.
So we in the veterinary community don't like certain diseases.
Well,
even
I would
though,
bet.
Well, you know,
are there
it was
some
like,
you do like?
Well, the thought process being you have to love allergic dogs because you make so much money off allergic dogs. And it's just like, you know, it's not worth it. I like to earn my money. There's other ways
the
that's
honest
fun.
Way.
Yeah, you know, saving a dog's life with a cancer surgery or something exciting like that. Knowing when your dog shows up at 6 months of age or 2 years of age, scratching and allergic, and it's not fleas and it's not something we can just easily put our finger on, we know we're going to get to know you so well, and you're going to hate us by about 3 or 4 years of seeing us 2 or 3 times a year. So allergic skin disease is number one, and it's out there in many forms and fashions. We have allergic skin disease secondary to food, which is one of the more frustrating ones to diagnose. But the good news is, if you go through all the efforts of diagnose food-related allergic skin disease, you're going to cure your allergy. There's also environmental allergies, and those are seasonal. There's spring kind of in the summer, there's summer sort of in the fall, and then there's winter environmental allergies. The gold standard for figuring out allergy in dogs is flea protection year-round, really good flea product, flea protection, doing diet trials, which are very frustrating, and ultimately possibly going to a dermatology referral center and getting a skin test. And even when we find out, we've had dogs test and they were just raging with all seasonal allergies. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so miserable. You can try to desensitize with injections like they do with children. But a lot of these animals end up having to be managed chronically for their breakouts using some sort of anti-inflammatories, whether it's antihistamines in mild cases, steroids are often incorporated, and when used judiciously are highly effective with allergy management.
That's Dr. Matt Fraker from the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center in Normal. If adding a new dog to your life is currently on your agenda, you might want to consider Becca, the Animal House Pet of the Week. Becca is a 4-year-old mix, part border collie, part pit bull. This happy girl loves interacting with people, and she loves the snacks. Lots and lots of snacks. So Becca's looking for a pet parent willing to dole out love, hugs, and long walks rather than handfuls of treats. You can find Becca at the Humane Society of Central Illinois. I'm Laura Kennedy.